Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Last time on Deep Space Nine.
You know, every science fiction show needs a The Most Dangerous Game episode.
We've had some conversations, you and I, about what we should do in lieu of vetoes. So it would be disingenuous
it's to... It's like I have an aphasia with respect to Deep Space Nine, Ben.
One thing that has been suggested is some mechanic whereby we get drunk.
I love the idea of getting drunk for episodes. If I smote you with getting drunk, I would want to get drunk with you. So, yeah. Like, the idea would be that we would both drink for the episode.
If we put it into a random number generator and we find out whether or not we are getting drunk for an episode.
I love that idea. The randomization makes it sound like a landmine, like a drunk landmine, and I'm all for it.
We need a random number between 1 and 15, and I'm going to generate that number now and see if our next episode is the one for which we tie one on. And I'm rolling. I literally got one.
What?
I'm not kidding. I'm gonna send you a screenshot of this right now.
No fucking way. Wow.
And now for the conclusion.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast and are ready to do some drinking. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, when we went during the cliffhanger of our last episode, we had come up with an insane idea for a path forward through Deep Space Nine, a path forward that involved the constant threat of drunkenness.
We really couldn't have fucked this up for ourselves worse, Adam. We are now going to have to get shithouse drunk, and we didn't have any time to get used to the idea.
So here's how this is going forward, just to restate, I guess, the rules of the game.
Yeah.
At the end of every episode, we're going to fire a random number generator for the amount of remaining episodes that there are.
I don't think it can be the number of remaining episodes, because then it would be like you know, if we have two left, then we have...
See, that's what I was going to say. Like, do we always do the finale drunk if it's one episode left? Like, how do we actually do that practically?
I think because we came up with this idea and have 15 episodes left, every single time we have a 1 in 15 chance of having a drunk episode next. And then for next season, it's like whatever the number of episodes, a 1 in that number.
Okay. And if we roll a 1, it's sort of like D&D, right? If we roll a 1, that is a critical miss. and then we go straight to Drunkville.
Right.
Okay.
What I was thinking we might start with is we bought some mezcal together last time we were both in New York at my favorite liquor store in the whole wide world, Duke's Liquor Box in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And they said that I don't want to get them in trouble, but they said that this stuff was maybe not exactly imported in the legalist of ways, and that it was also very rare. They produced like 45 bottles of this mezcal, and 10 of them wound up in New York, and 2 of them wound up in our possession, Adam.
Which is, I love liquor with a story.
Yeah.
And that was very exciting to me.
Yeah. So this is called, I think the producer is Farolito, and each bottle is personally signed by the mezcalero that distilled it. So this is like one of my favorite things I've ever, like one of the most extravagant gifts I've ever gotten myself.
Absolutely.
I needed you there as an extravagance buddy to feel okay about doing it.
Ben, I will always be your extravagance buddy.
But this, I think we can say, like, this is a bottle that the folks that came out to see us on tour really bought for us. This was our little gift to ourselves toward the end of our tour.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Three things that heighten the experience of a rare liquor, Ben. One, a great story. We got that from Dukes. 2, handwritten label, which on the back of my bottle, and I'm sure yours is as well, we have the Maestro Mezcalero's name written in ballpoint pen.
Yeah.
And 3, contact information with a Hotmail email address. That's how you know what you're getting is the good, real shit. And I had a taste of this as soon as the bottle got to me, and that was many weeks ago. I'm excited to try it again. So let's pour a good serving into our Jicaras and then start our episode today, Ben. Our episode is Season 1, Episode 5, Captive Pursuit. Cheers to you, buddy.
Chin chin. A very upsetting open to this episode, given all of the terrible stuff in the news about Harvey Weinstein. We get a complaint from one of the women that works in Quark's bar about Quark v. Weinstein.
When did you start to have trouble with Quark?
About 5 minutes after I got off the ship.
And kind of true to the darker nature of Deep Space Nine, doesn't seem like Quark is going to get much of a punishment. He wrote a sexual harassment, like a pro-sexual harassment clause into all of his employees' contracts. And the solution to this in Sisko's mind is, I'm going to go down there and get him to not enforce that part of the contract.
There's a sort of wordplay happening in this scene, Ben, where, Ben Sisko is like accepting the accusation of the Dabo girl and then sort of referring to the contract as stated and then getting interrupted as he gets to the point that talks specifically about what sex acts she's supposed to perform on him.
Yeah.
Like every time he's interrupted by her once and then he's interrupted later by a communique from the bridge. Ben, I keep calling it the bridge, but it's not. What do they call it on the show?
I think they call it ops.
Ops.
Which is just one desk on the bridge of a starship, but it's the whole damn thing on a space station.
And on the space station, it doesn't recline.
Well, I guess in the 24th century, as in the 21st century, women's complaints about the rapey advances of scummy men go ignored. That is like not something that we pick up ever again in this episode.
After I talk to Quark, he won't hold you or anyone else to this provision concerning the exchange.
Commander, sensors are picking up elevated neutrino readings.
Sisko goes out into the op section and they're getting some indication that an unknown ship, an UFO, is coming through the wormhole. And
Ben, it's so fucked up before we end that part that like we get coffee bookends in Babel with O'Brien. Gotta tie up that coffee bookend in the last scene of the last episode, and I was fully expecting the harassment thing to be, quote-unquote, resolved at the end of this episode. Spoiler alert, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, that is sort of the issue that people are trying to get everyone to confront is that that is what passed for resolving a harassment issue for a long, long, long time.
You know, what's interesting to me is how little issues of this type are brought up in the Star Trek universe, a place that is a melting pot of different cultures and norms and stuff.
Right.
You would think there would be all sorts of unfortunate groping and masturbation happening on the station, you know? Like aliens are involved, right? How different can you be?
Yeah. Oh, that guy touched my knees, and that's where I keep my genitals. Oh, well. He thought he was just he thought he was just putting a creepy hand on your knee.
Right. Ben, as we get to ops, it looks like the station has developed a real casual Friday vibe. You know, like the front zips are sort of zipped to where maybe your second shirt button would be. And a lot of people have like rolled up sleeves and stuff.
I never even considered the fact that this is a show with all front zips.
Yeah. It really is. It makes me wonder if that's sort of a subtle nod to the looseness of command that Sisko may have over everyone. Like, this is not a uniform dress, you know, to the letter of the code sort of place.
Now, everybody knows that back zips are the more elite members of any crew. What Deep Space Nine presupposes is, what if it was all front zips?
In the land of the front zips, the single back zip is king.
It's the bad news bears of Star Trek shows.
Yeah, it really is.
They get this guy on the FaceTime who's coming through the wormhole. It is a starship design that is unfamiliar to them. And up on the screen comes a green alien. And I feel like I have a theory that we will have a chance to test over many years, but I feel like Star Trek gets its green aliens out of its system in the first season or two.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think that we're going to see a lot of green aliens after this guy in this series. And I feel like there were some like green fish versus dog aliens in TNG, but then like everybody's pretty much like different browns and grays after that.
If you're gonna make a green alien, I think you need to make a weird green alien and not just another derivative version of the enemy mine alien, which is what this guy looks like.
He looks like halfway between enemy mine and the crocodile guy from Suicide Squad.
I would have to have seen Suicide Squad to get that reference, Ben. Tell me you didn't pay full price to see that at the Americana.
I saw that on the back of an airplane seat screen as the director intended the film to be seen.
That Jared Leto is a thought crime!
Also just a weird missed opportunity to have this guy look like a crocodile, but have an ostrich leather suit.
He looked for a moment like he wasn't wearing any clothes at all because his clothes look so closely like his skin.
Yeah, they're very tailored.
It's the equivalent of if you were to wear a bodysuit that was flesh colored. Mm-hmm. It's a little disturbing. Looks like he might be walking around naked.
Well, old boy's ship is in bad shape and they offer to beam him out before it explode and he refuses categorically to abandon his ship.
I will not abandon my vessel.
Sir, your ship is in danger of...
I will not leave.
So they come up with what seems like a better solution that they may have considered first if if I was in charge, which is, oh, we'll do a tractor beam and shore up his structural issues and bring him in on board his own ship safely. Like, this is the first time they're meeting anybody from the other side of the wormhole. So, like, I wouldn't necessarily beam that guy directly into the command center first thing.
Not at all. I think the crew of Deep Space Nine has received different instructions on what first contact should be. They're really kind of winging it.
Yeah, well, they say at one point, like, they're like, I think O'Brien is going to like head down and help him wrench on his ship, and they're like, so just like no first contact stuff this time? Yeah, like we'll deal with that later.
It's so weird how the Federation delegates resources in their territory, because, you know, who are the people who typically make first contact? It's like galaxy class starships on the furthest reaches of space.
Yeah.
Like, categorically, Deep Space Nine qualifies as that sort of importance because it's right next to this wormhole out of which any number of new species could come.
I could see there and being like an officer that is specially tasked with this job stationed on the station.
Anything more than the 8 Federation people who work there, I think, would be a good amount of manpower.
Let's send the handyman down.
Yeah, we'll have O'Brien do this. a man who is used to spending hours and hours by himself.
Do you think they?
He's not going to be socially weird.
Do you think that they looked at this guy's loaf when he got on the FaceTime and they were like, "That's a dead ringer for one-off loaf. We can send O'Brien to meet this guy."
That's some pretty dangerous loaf stereotyping, Ben.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
So he goes down there and he's like poking around in the ship and there's nobody there. It's unoccupied, and up in ops, they're like, yeah, I mean, sensors say that there's somebody there, Chief, so maybe you've got some aftershocks from your aphasia virus or something.
Keep being alone on an alien ship, O'Brien.
Yeah, keep, like, being alone with your head stuck through an access panel so you can't see if anybody's coming up behind you.
It's so insane.
Very weird. Very, very weird. I mean, nice to...
Do you think they want him to die? Like, is this a subtle, maybe this is a way we can get rid of O'Brien situation here?
I mean, after the last episode, I feel like they would be really heartless if they don't just take pity on O'Brien.
Maybe they really, really like coffee, and they do not think it's funny that it's so bad at the station.
Well, he is, like, halfway toward diagnosing the issue when this alien sort of appears out of nowhere behind him and starts making suggestions, and O'Brien has a great like bang his head against the undercarriage of the ship take when he realizes that he's been snuck up on.
The collegium flow has been damaged.
O'Brien is on the one hand the worst person for this mission, but on the other hand, like in a vacuum, just has a naturally friendly carriage about him that is very non-threatening. That, like, you know, and his bumbling here is sort of works in a diplomatic favor, you know?
Yeah.
This guy doesn't know anything about him, but he's so much of a goof that, like, you're not going to be threatened by him.
He can make friends with anybody that walks into the local pub, you know? He's not picky. He's not a snob. He's just a regular guy down to have a conversation with anybody. And that
right.
that makes him accessible, even to an alien.
Right.
We get to know that this guy is Tosk. And that seems to be the, like, his species category and his name and everything that anybody could care to know about him.
Right.
O'Brien introduces himself and they talk over the possibility of repairing the ship.
His ship appears to run off of blue Radio Shack police lights also. Which is like a form of power that is many, many years in the past to the crew of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Ben, did you ever get one of those police lights from Radio Shack and go driving around with it?
I never went driving around with it. I think I had one for a long time that I used as a special effects lighting in a music video. But I don't have anymore, unfortch.
Gotta tell you, me and a buddy had one of these in high school and experienced its power on a drive one night in a way that... that was profoundly illegal in a way that I'm uncomfortable admitting on the show.
Man.
Like, it really works. No one should have these or use them, FYI. Like the caveat being, don't do that. That's dumb.
My parents are part of their neighborhood club that assembles items for earthquake preparedness. And I was at in high school, I discovered that a bullhorn was in the trunk of my father's car when I borrowed it to go to school one day. And I took it upon myself to stand in the parking lot after school for like 45 minutes directing traffic and like making ridiculous demands of people. And I have a very vivid memory of like the coolest kid in the grade ahead of me sitting in his BMW, like laughing hysterically and thinking, God, he thinks this is such a great bit. And then like realizing like many years later, like, oh, he was laughing at what an idiot I was.
Right. My high school buddy, Dan, was a really frequent shopper of Radio Shack. And he was the first friend of mine who had cobbled together a home theater system in his bedroom. Like, he was that guy.
Oh, he was the Ferris Bueller of the group.
I asked for a car, I got a computer. How's that for being born under a bad sign?
Yeah, he got the blue police light, and he also had the speaker mounted under the bumper of his car, which was an old early 80s 320i.
Man.
And one of the most fun things we did with the speaker was we really liked the movie True Lies at the time.
Oh, sure.
And there's a moment in that movie where Schwarzenegger, having discovered the true goals of the antagonists, announces that this is a bright point alert. A bright point alert. And the bright point alert was a thing that we used to announce all the time on the car-mounted PA system.
Fun. Well, they walk into the promenade area of Deep Space Nine, and Tosk is just as blown away by everything he sees as he is by O'Brien. Like, he's inquisitive, and he like doesn't know how close to stand to people. Like, if he's interested in somebody, he walks up and like, you know, chest almost touching them, like head cocking to the side and back as he explores their visage.
Speaking of people with no boundaries.
Yeah, he cannot wrap his mind around what Deep Space Nine is.
What is its purpose?
Purpose?
Defense?
Surveillance?
Sisko asks O'Brien for his take on him. Even though O'Brien has no professional qualifications and his judgment has no credibility, like he's sort of point man W/R/T Tosk.
Yeah, Sisko never
like
introduces himself.
Like, it's not a temporary thing.
Yeah.
It's not temporarily go figure out what's rattling around on that ship. It's like figure out the ship but also be this guy's guardian while he's here.
Like, this episode might as well be like cutting back and forth between O'Brien showing Tosk around and repairing his ship and Sisko sitting in his office playing solitaire on his desk.
Right.
Like, what is Sisko doing? This, like, is the first alien you're meeting from the other side of the wormhole, 90,000 light years away or whatever.
Great leaders delegate, but what isn't said in that statement is great leaders delegate well.
One thing we learn in this is that the wormhole has been super busy. Like O'Brien is telling Tosk about like the function that Deep Space Nine serves as this hub between this part of the galaxy and the other. And he's saying like 5-6 ships a week, sometimes convoys go through the wormhole. Like, a ton of traffic is going through the wormhole. And it is amazing to me that this is the first time they've encountered anybody from the other side.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird, and I also want to see a convoy.
Yeah, where's the convoy at? What are they doing? What are they conveying?
Give me that sweet, sweet convoy footage.
Deep Space Nine, caravanserai of the Gamma Quadrant.
Yeah, it's an exciting time to be alive on Deep Space Nine.
Sure is. This incredulity and inquisitiveness that Tosk displays is something he maintains for days. Like, it's implied that, like, a bunch of time is passing as they, like, work on repairing a ship, diagnosing the problem, him researching where to get weapons on the station, him and O'Brien going down to Quark's bar, and, like, everywhere he goes, everyone he meets is, like, weird, uncomfortable, too close standing, asking questions that seem insane.
Fucking O'Brien, like, escorts him to his quarters and is like, well, I'm going to go sleep for 8 hours. And Tosca's like, wait, like, that's not what I do. What am I supposed to do? And O'Brien's like, beats me. See ya. Like, it is insane to me that he just leaves him alone.
Yeah.
And sure as shit, as soon as O'Brien leaves Tosca alone, Tosca goes up to a computer and he's like, hey, computer, where are the weapons at?
Where are them guns?
Not great.
No, not super great. This episode, Adam, I feel like could use some B story. Like, we make fun of this these shows sometimes for having like too many layered stories. This really has like an A story and that's it. And I don't think that the A story has enough meat on the bone.
Here's why that's important. Because without a B story to cut back and forth from, you're left with the time and the ability to pick apart the A story and why it's so insane. Like, in many ways, like, a B story does a lot of weight carrying because it's a distraction, right? You don't see the warts of the A story while you're in the B story.
And sometimes it can be a nice way to, like, thematically counterbalance the A story.
Right.
In this, we like, the only time we're away from Tosk, it's when O'Brien is, like, up in ops getting asked a million questions by everybody about the guy that has become his best buddy.
Yeah, and O'Brien is talking about him like he's a puppy. Like, oh, he's clearly not a threat because he doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
But, like, what the fuck does O'Brien know?
Yeah.
Like, O'Brien's exposure to aliens is 10 seconds after beaming them on board the Enterprise, and then what he's able to overhear as they walk out of the transporter room.
Yeah, making a wisecrack about their weird barrel of fish. Tosk is a weird alien, too. Like, he doesn't need to sleep that much, and he doesn't need to eat, even. And
he has no vices.
Has no vices. Quirk.
What if Tosk started smoking cigarettes? Like, a lot of them.
I'm going to stand here and watch you smoke every one of those cigarettes. Then maybe you'll learn.
It would be great if he had picked up a vice. I think that'd be so fun.
I live the greatest adventure one could ever desire.
Tosk is trying to break into the weapons locker, and the camera pans very intensely over to a painting that looks like a eighth grader did it. And the painting starts melting, and it turns out that Constable Odo was planning a stakeout, and catches Tosk red-handed trying to steal phasers and such.
Ben, I so wanted to pan over to the painting and have the painting have eyes, like that old-timey picture with the eye holes.
What if it had panned over and it was that painting of the horse playing the saxophone and the horse's eye was panning around?
This leads me to another question. Like, when he takes the shape of something else, is the whole thing eyes? How is he able to see if he doesn't have eyes in the thing that he's become? You know what I mean?
He seems to have a sensory apparatus, but it's unclear how it works.
It would be great if, in order to surveil, he had to have eyes on whatever object it was. And so, like, in the last episode, Quark's beverage cart, like, has googly eyes on the front. Or the painting here has that saxophone horse with eyes.
And Odo always just keeps a packet of self-adhesive googly eyes in his pocket and puts them on things all over the station as he walks around just to keep people on their toes.
Like, I know it's cool to keep us in suspense on the rules of Odo, but I think this is a pretty big thing to reconcile. Like, how does he work functionally?
Yeah.
People should know that on the ship. You don't want to work with a guy that you don't know where his eyes are.
Yeah, can you not sneak up behind Odo?
Here's an idea, Ben. Like, if you, let's say you're Ben Sisko, and you get assigned to Deep Space Nine, and you're very dramatic in all of your interactions.
Okay.
And you're working with Kira and the Constable and all the Bajoran, you know, delegates that work on the station. Don't you have to set up ground rules for Odo? Like, Odo, here's the thing. you cannot become a paperweight on my desk. Like, the rule is you must announce yourself before being in my room or whatever. Don't there have to be rules like that for him?
I think so. I mean, it'd be like go on a date and come home and be getting into some intimate fun times, and then realize, like, I don't remember having a potted plant in that corner.
Odo's your condom? How'd you like to roll on Odo?
Oh, no! Gross.
That would be awful. But, like, wouldn't you be paranoid all the time?
Yeah.
I would be.
Yeah. And
I think there has to be some ground rules here.
Gotta be some Odo ground rules.
This is more Fast and Loose Ben Sisko as commander of the station.
I think that the most ridiculous part of Tosk is that anytime they ask him a question that would illuminate, like, what he was running from when he went into the wormhole, or, like, why he's so skittish, or why he was trying to break into the gun locker, is he just says, I cannot discuss it. And this winds up getting revealed to be, like, he took some sort of vow of secrecy with the other species from his planet. And it's just, like, this is like another example of why we need a B storyline, like, or come up with a better reason for why he's not talking more, you know,
or a competent security man. Like, why does this shit fly here?
Yeah,
even Worf would lock him in his quarters and interrogate him.
Yeah,
and Worf was terrible at security.
Well, it is not long after Tosk is thrown into the brig for trying to steal guns that another similar but different ship comes through the wormhole, and they take a lot more defensive of a posture with these guys, and they even, like, raise the shields, but these guys have an ability to reverse the polarization on Deep Space Nine's defense shields, and three guys beam onto the promenade in bright red war costumes.
They're dressed for 70s Battlestar Galactica cosplay.
Yeah, like, if you gave the people that did the Flash Gordon movie the task of designing the Predator, this is what they would have come up with.
That is spot on.
This is like an invasion force, for all anybody can tell. Like, they're walking around, they're shooting. There's, like, an incredibly lethargic firefight on the promenade where, you know, like, basically every character from the show is down there shooting phasers and, like, trying to bullseye these guys.
Did you ever feel like the station was threatened existentially, though? Like, I didn't get the sense that these guys were murdering people in a way that maybe they should have been.
Yeah, like, that's what's so weird is, like, they come in and there's a firefight where, like, all of the senior staff and the entire security detail are like shooting these guys, and they're getting shot, they're falling off of catwalks on the second level of the promenade, like, shit is getting torn apart, and yet, like, the way the shots are framed, the way the scene is cut together, there's, like, zero suspense, zero seeming stakes in this firefight, and like, conveniently, everybody that needs to be in the scene runs into the brig and discovers the one guy that made it past the firefight talking to Tosk, and he takes off his helmet. And he's kind of like Tosk if he had had a better dermatologist when he was 16.
Ben, as soon as he took off his helmet, the first thought that went to my mind was, he's got a puppy nose.
Well, Tosk does too. Like, they have the same nose. It's just that Tosk is way bumpier on the rest of his face.
One of the reasons I never felt like these guys were a threat is because they look like college mascots for a college whose mascot is a future robot or something. Like, big giant metal head, red suit, big silver vinyl boots.
Yeah,
like,
little blinky lights everywhere.
They look cheap, yeah, in a way that the rest of the show doesn't.
In a way that Tosk doesn't.
Yeah, that's so weird.
Like, Tosk is not an inspired makeup job, but at least the makeup is, like, very well executed.
The idea here is that these guys are hunters, and they hunt guys like Tosk. But in every other depiction of a hunter-hunted race, the hunted looks less threatening than the hunters, and these hunters don't look threatening at all.
Yeah, like, this guy's got, like, a beer gut and looks like he's, you know, wasting a career in middle management and, like, hates his wife and kids, you know? He just looks like a middle-aged shithead.
Really disappointing.
These guys have beamed onto the station without permission, ripped a bunch of shots off at senior staff and the security detail. They should be just as locked up as Tosk is, but instead, the commander is like, well, let's discuss this with these guys.
The conversation they have basically goes nowhere. They're in Sisko's ready room, and this hunter explains the deal. The deal that, you know, these Tosk guys are bred to be hunted. It's totally noble. Everything's on the up and up here. And also, talk to the Michael Jackson glove. I'm not trying to hear you anymore.
God fucking damn it. I have that exact same thing written down in my notes.
Sisko is totally impotent throughout this entire episode. Like, he does not make one good decision.
It's like the
thing.
And
he totally gets overrun by everyone.
It's like what we were talking about with, like, all the different, like, cultural differences that you would have to confront at the station.
Right.
Like, he is being incredibly accommodating of Quark's wanting to take sexual liberties with his female employees, but, well, I guess it's actually on brand. He's also being incredibly accommodating of the guys that want to have a firefight on the promenade because it's part of their cultural tradition.
I don't get how you get to be a commander while being that accommodating.
Yeah.
We saw the commander test that Troy took.
Yeah.
Like, how does Sisko pass that test?
He's like, maybe the warp core should blow up because that's what the warp core wants, man.
I don't know, Geordi. Do you want to go fix the warp core and die in the process? Tell me, if that's what you want to do, you should go do it.
Yeah.
But only if it's something you want to do.
Not here to make enemies.
He's sort of like the cool substitute teacher guy.
Yeah. He's like, okay, well, I'm not gonna pass judgment about your culture, which is largely centered around killing sentient beings. You can take your guy and go home. And what we've gotten from these hunter guys is that Tosk is gonna go home to a life of ignominy.
Where children can make fun of you, toss you scraps of food, which is more than you deserve.
He has shamed his entire species in allowing himself to be captured by the crew on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, poor Tosk. Doesn't sound great.
No. Yeah.
He seems pretty understanding about this fate, though. He's like, yeah, I fucked up. I shouldn't be in this jail. I blew it by going in the wormhole big time.
Yeah. I think that the thing that they don't count on is what good friends Tosk and Chief O'Brien have become. Because O'Brien takes off his badge and he's walking the hunter and Tosk to the exit of the promenade, which is not really clear why they would be going there because these guys beamed in the first place. But they're going out one of the airlocks and the door zaps the hunter and, like, knocks him back, and the chief even throws a punch and knocks the guy unconscious. And he and Tosk are, like, racing through the station, running away, and the hunter has one of those great scenes where he gets up off the ground and, like, shakes it out a little bit, and he gets on his communicator and says, "The hunt has resumed."
I had to play this back a couple of times. Did you hear the sound of O'Brien's punch to the hunter's face?
No.
It was the shittiest Foley punch sound I've ever heard.
Was it like I stole a CD of Foley sounds, like, from my last job, and this is the only punch on the CD?
Like, I can totally forgive the overly loud Foley punch that sounds like a garbage can being thrown down some stairs. Like, I love a cartoonish Foley punch, but this sounded like nothing.
Yeah.
It sounded like Play-Doh being dropped on the floor. Like, there was nothing there.
Glass jaw. Now I know why you wear a helmet.
You gotta give O'Brien a better sounding punch, man.
Yeah, this is one of the stars of the show. He's gotta have a great punch sound.
So there's sort of a foot chase around the station.
And the foot chase is much more exciting than the earlier firefight, I want to say. Like, there's, like, crawling around in the Jeffries tubes, and there's shooting, and there's punching. And up in ops, like, they realize what's going on. They realize that Chief O'Brien has taken off his comm badge and, you know, slapped it on a bulkhead so that they won't know where he is. And Odo is, like, ripshit. He's, like, champing at the bit. He says, like, let me at him, boss. Like, I want to nab these guys before they get out. And Sisko's like, maybe, take your time with that. Like, don't make it your most pressing issue.
Turn yourself into something slow moving and then head that way.
maybe it'd be interesting if they were taken into custody by a sloth. An adorable three-toed sloth. From the jungles of Costa Rica.
How long would it take a tree to get there? I don't know.
Let's find out. Let's use this as an opportunity for science.
Yeah, and Odo just sort of slinks his way to the turbo lift, waits four beats, and then hits the elevator button.
They definitely are like I could just see like the assistant director just off screen doing the stretch it out hand motion, right. like he's stretching out taffy, like just let it ride, Renee, just let it ride. We could use as much time. We do not have a B story to cut to, so just fucking milk this moment for all it is worth.
Renee Auberginois, a great actor.
He kills millions of Germans, but yet we forgive him.
So they're nearly escaped, and they're like in a hallway, and the Flash Gordon predators beam in, and the one that we've met, the one that's taken his helmet off, is still got helmet off, and they start licking shots, and O'Brien is gonna return fire, and Tosk is like, no, man, it's got to be me. I've got to be the one that returns fire. And like knocks his dustbuster down. Raises his ersatz Chewie from Star Wars laser crossbow and takes out the hunter.
Yeah.
All three hunters in one shot.
Sort of an impossible shot, if you ask me. How does he do it?
Yeah, he's just that good. He's trained his whole life for this.
Yeah.
And that's like maybe the only interesting idea in this episode is like, what if the prey is genetically engineered to like so identify with being prey that that's what he wants to be. Like, it's kind of the thing that sucks about Saru in Star Trek Discovery is like we've gotten like three really impassioned speeches from Saru at this point about how he is a prey animal on his planet and his people have fear boners for a reason. And he that's like all we've gotten. Like, that's all we know about Saru at this point. Tosk, like, it presents an interesting question. Like, they genetically engineered him to be smart, but also to want to be hunted. And it's also, like, it's like a job that gives him, like, a sense of purpose in life. Like, his being captured in ignominy brings great shame on him. And so, like, we can.
Well, Ben, the thing that really didn't work for me, and this is something I'll probably talk a little bit more at the end of the episode, which is like, I wanted to be impressed by Tosk. Like, I wanted him to be really good at being prey.
Right.
But as soon as he's captured, he sucks. Like,
what you want from him is.
Why didn't he escape from prison or something?
Yeah, what you want is that, like, super soldier vibe from that episode
right.
of TNG where the guy is, like,
yeah.
like taking on 14 security officers in the hallway and beating them all to a pulp.
That's what I wanted. But instead, he acted like a guy in laser tag who had been shot and who was like walking his way back to like the locker room area, like, because the game is over. Like, the game should never be over to him. And he gives up so easily. That was really, that I think took a lot of the juice out of the episode, his give up nature. If he was bred to be prey and to be sporting prey. I thought he would be more sporting than this. Like, he should be cheating and willing to cheat.
It's like that kind of, there's like a span of like 20 episodes of TNG where Worf is living with this commendation, and every time a Klingon comes on board the ship, he has to like put his tail between his legs and slink off.
Yeah, and that's what Tosca's doing here. He's patacking around.
Yeah, he's really a major patak at most points of this episode.
Right. I really like that that early 1990s show starring Gerald McRaney called Major Patak.
You like that one, huh?
I liked it. Everyone loves a Gerald McRaney reference. Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, the foremost source for Gerald McRaney humor.
I think there may have been some Gerald McRaney jokes on a recent Stuff You Should Know.
Oh, really?
They did like a two-episode arc on The Simpsons that was great, and it was a lot of fun to listen to, and I think they made a lot of fun of Major Tad.
Well, that was an unintentional reference then.
Maybe they didn't actually, and I'm just like imagining what, when the mics are off, Josh and Chuck would say about Major Tad.
If you've ever wondered that, you don't have to wonder any longer, because you're hearing Ben and I talk about it right now.
I could see there being like maybe like a great Max Fun Drive special episode would be us calling up Josh and Chuck and getting their frankest opinions about Major Dad.
We'll just cover a random Major Dad episode for the pledge drive. The Majorist Generation.
Is this too Egyptian for a satyr?
Yes, I think my accessories are a little too major for you.
Just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
O'Brien helps Tosk get onto his dinky little ship. Tosk tucks his crossbow up into the overhead compartment where I guess his sunglasses would normally go, and they say kind of a game recognized game goodbye,
like respect knuckles. Yeah, there's a moment here where Tosk is like, "Hey, bud, you coming with? That was pretty kick ass back there. The way you handled yourself in the hallway. Like, maybe you can come along with me."
Yeah, he says, "Like you're now a Tosk also." And O'Brien's like, "Oh, that's cool. I got a couple of Tosks the wife needs me to take care of back home." So
he's sort of like that husband who goes out drinking with the boys for the first time in a long time, and the boys are like, "Man, you got to do this more often. We're having a blast right now." And he's like, "No, I really can't make this a habit, guys. I got a wife and kids.
I got a wife and two girlfriends on the side, man. I'm a busy man."
I feel like if O'Brien's being really true to his character, I think he gives this more of a thought than we really see here.
Yeah.
Like, this is his chance to escape, Ben.
What would have taken this episode from a solid C minus to a solid A plus is just like one little cut in when Tosk suggests this at the end, just like an ECU on O'Brien's face, and just seeing the potential of that wash over him. Like, it would have all been worth it.
There's time for that.
Yeah.
Just give us 2 seconds of an ECU there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Odo taking a fraction less time to get on the elevator, and you get that one little cut, it would have been amazing. The button on the episode is O'Brien in Sisko's office, and he is getting a major ass-chewing.
It's a major ass-chew until O'Brien puts the chew on the other ass by being...
Oh, like, slip the title in under the wire, Adam. Very nicely done.
Like, Ben Sisko, didn't you have the opportunity to send Odo down to help wrangle the guy so that I wasn't caught out there like by myself? Like, didn't you have some delegating that you could have done to bring this guy to justice?
Doesn't this station have a staff?
And then Sisko totally fucking cops to it.
Yeah.
Why does he cop to it?
Like, why make the show of chewing the ass if you're going to also admit that you were just chewing the ass for show?
I know. And all this does, Ben, is like, how does O'Brien ever respect Sisko's authority again after this? I'm gonna put a pin in that and also say, like, the idea of bending and breaking rules is fully on the table from here on out, right?
Yeah.
Because O'Brien does it earlier and throughout the episode and goes unpunished. Sisko admits to a subordinate that he's done so. Like, you got people unzipping their uniforms to the second button and rolling up their sleeves throughout the station. What is going on here? There are no rules on the station.
The inmates are running the asylum.
I truly believe that O'Brien could be a chaos agent for the rest of the series. And I don't remember enough about this series to know whether or not that happens, but the possibilities are there.
Yeah.
I could get behind that.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
Here's the thing. I really like the episode if it is the introduction to O'Brien being the chaos agent that I have a feeling he will not become. Like, the idea of this station being outside of the grasp of the Federation, like sort of Federation in name only, is really interesting to me. And it's something that I hope that they pay off from time to time, if not all the time. But this episode as it is fairly derivative of a number of stories of this kind, sure, both in science fiction and, you know, in a lot of places.
Yeah.
And it didn't do it in a particularly better or more interesting way than any of those other places that you could experience the story. So I would say that I did not like the episode.
Like, if you're going to remix a song, you want it to be like either just a way better version of the song or a totally interesting take on the song that makes you consider it in a new and interesting way.
This is not Columini's fault. It's not the guy who plays Tosk's fault. Like, it's a very well-acted episode.
Yeah, Columini is actually, like, pretty great in this episode. And I thought that he was a little weak in the previous episode. Like, it's
for as much screen time as he got, too. Like, he's been a major focus two times in a row.
Yeah. Like I feel like in the previous episode, when he's, like, speaking nonsense, he's great. And, like, when he's speaking coherent sentences, it's like somebody has handed him a note card with what his line is going to be in the next scene. And he's like, fuck, yeah, like, I have to memorize this right now.
He's just really put off by it.
Yeah.
And that informs his performance.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Adam, one thing that never puts us off is Priority One messages procured by our viewers. Do you want to check and see what we have in store?
Let's do it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Paul. It is for Ben and Adam. Yes, you too. And I guess by that he means us too, Ben.
Oh, man.
It's for us.
Yay.
Message goes like this. Everyone always said a Star Trek podcast would be too embarrassing to be funny. But what this show presupposes is maybe it's not. I grew up watching TNG, and you guys have given me a new way to look at one of my favorite shows. Found the podcast in July, binged the whole thing, and wish I'd found it sooner. Keep up the funny. Thanks.
That's great.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. I love it when people binge the whole thing.
I really can't imagine what that's like.
It's like the nicest thing to hear in the whole wide world.
It really is. I mean, that's not to say that I dislike hearing it at all. It's just I don't understand it. I've heard my voice. I know what it sounds like. Can't be great. And I've heard your voice too, Ben. Yeah,
not good.
Not winning any awards for that one.
No. Our next Priority One message is from Yogi your husband your potato salad. And it is for Boo Boo, my husband, my macaroni salad. It goes like this, Adam. Boo Boo, and now you too have been schismed. With a P1. Thanks for introducing me to this pod and for listening with me through the seasons, even if we are listening at different times in different places. I wonder if Ben and Adam will enjoy all these carbs again. I love you. Happy birthday. May all your Shimotas be drunk.
I love being a part of a great couple's celebration. We're like the healthy part of a balanced breakfast, Ben.
I feel bad because this is real belated. This was supposed to be as close to September 30 as possible. And in their note, they said, you can take a Razor Plavim message away for this one.
Oh, man, I wish we had.
I feel like Raz and Plavim would be cool with that. But it is like we go through enough like headaches just schedule it. Like scheduling these is like surprisingly difficult. And so anyway, sorry for the very belated birthday message, Boo Boo, but happy
Hope
birthday.
It's a great one.
Yeah, it was.
Happy birthday.
That was one of the great P1s, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's practically tradition at this point for the salads of potato and macaroni.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, if you would like to start your own tradition, you could go ahead over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It is $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message, and it really helps the production of our program.
Thanks, guys.
Yarmouk, Pangolin, Tanagra.
Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that. And more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and back yards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right?
Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself. No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I sure did, Ben. I think the most Shimoda moment of the episode is the fucking crack shot that Tosk takes at the main hunter guy that somehow hits the other two hunters. Like, it's like he picks up a spare in that hallway with that single shot. It makes no sense that his single shot knocks down all of them. They fall down like so many bowling pins, like basically on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
It is complete bullshit. Tosk should have shot three times. Why didn't he?
Yeah.
A single shot doesn't make any sense in that context.
Like, can he not go pew, pew, pew? Does it have to recharge like a disposable camera flash or something?
Or, like, shoot twice and then beat the shit out of the third guy with the butt of your weird crossbow. Like vary it up a little bit with the melee combat.
It would have been a lot more fun if there had been some more compound fight scenes in this episode. Like, all the fight scenes, like, this is a much more exciting fight scene than the, like, 18-person shootout on the promenade.
Right.
And still, like, it would have been 10 times better if it had been like shoot somebody to cause chaos at the other end of the hallway and then bum rush them, or like he and O'Brien like crisscross shooting and like closing in like fucking Navy SEALs in a dark hallway at midnight.
They seem far more willing to go hand to hand in Next Gen, and it makes me wonder if it's still like a division of resources thing at this point between the two shows.
Yeah.
Like if your stunt choreographer is still working across the street, like, you're just going to be the pew pew show until TNG ends, you know?
Maybe that's how it went.
Yeah. What about you, Ben?
I forget. What's the question?
What's your drunk Shimoda? Did you already say?
My drunk Shimoda is Tosk also. And I give it to him not for that fight scene, but for the level of incredulity he maintains for days and days. Like, I just found it very, very hilarious and Shimoda-like that, like, they're like 2 days in with him and he's still close talking people, asking ridiculous questions, and just like he maintains the same demeanor the entire time. Like, he never relaxes into these are just chill people who aren't trying to hunt me.
I feel like the core component to any fish out of water story is the unexpected interest in a thing that everyone else thinks is normal that they overconsume. Right?
What they should have done is had him like love replicator coffee or something, you know?
That's what I'm saying.
Like, play like, with the thing from the last episode. This is Deep Space Nine. We can do these kinds of things.
Tosk is like, you mean you can get bean dip out of the replicator like and as much as you want of it? Like, Tosk was from the Delta Quadrant, and he had a hunger on for bean dip.
What he didn't realize was in the Alpha Quadrant, a little so-and-so named Chief O'Brien was ready to replicate up as much bean dip as Tosk wanted. Coming this summer.
They seem willing to make fun with Tosk about his fish out of waterness without willing to fully make fun of him in a way that I feel like is satisfying for a story of this type. They just sort of half-ass him a little bit.
Like, if you're doing it, and like, I think the most storied example of this in sci-fi is Stranger in a Strange Land. Like,
right.
Have there be some things about his culture that are interesting and compelling. Like, blow our minds a little bit. Like, come up with a a more or a word or an idea that is like cool and new that he can be like all about, you know? I just don't grok why they didn't do that.
Yeah, I don't either. It's like they had a B story here that was just fully expunged. It's weird. Ben, what do we have coming up for the next episode?
The next episode is season 1, episode 6, Q-less, The Irrepressible...
Yes!
Fuck off. The Irrepressible Q and the adventurous Vash arrive at Deep Space Nine just as strange destructive forces begin threatening the space station.
Wow. I am really happy to see Q again. This is great.
I'm more happy to see Vash and very unhappy to see Q.
Vash is great.
Vash is 10 times cooler than Q and really doesn't need Q. Like she's so much better than him.
Star Trek does the thing of sending a person with an omnipotent creature away and we get so few check-ins with them.
Yeah, where you at, Wesley? How did you come to that? How did you come to be at that wedding at the beginning of that one movie? Despite the fact that you've gone on like the ultimate nerd rumspringer with the Traveler.
It's like they forget about these characters, Ben. I don't understand it.
Don't forget
about
Vash.
They forget about their most interesting characters.
Yeah. Adam, do you want to find out if we're going to be drinking as much as we drank tonight on this next episode?
Let's find out, Ben. I hope not, but I also hope so in a weird way.
Okay, I'm clicking generate on the random number generator. And our number is 4, so we will not be drinking.
Bullet dodged with my last slug of mezcal.
And mine of
Ricea. I'm feeling
Ricea.
Great right now.
Well, if you want to nerd out about the pod, you can go to a number of places online. We've got the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter, which is a lot of fun. We've got a great subreddit and a great Facebook group that is close to 3,000 members, which is fucking bonkers. And we really appreciate
it. I was sort of drunkly zoning out while you said that. You were talking about the Facebook thing, right?
Yeah.
You can also chat us up on Twitter using the hashtag
GreatestGen. I already said that, Adam. I already took care of that part.
Fuck.
Here's what we should say. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for so much theme music. It is almost insane at this point. And we should tell people to go to MaximumFun.org/donate if they like the show enough to support us. You know, recently we lost a donor because we expressed some empathy to people who aren't straight, white, cisgendered males. And that has really deeply impacted the bottom line. So if you want to make up for that shortfall because you are a person who appreciates this program, you can go to MaximumFun.org/donate. And it is a miracle that anybody cares enough to contribute financially to the production of this program. But it also like really depends on that at this point. Like if we did not have the generous support that we do, the thing we are doing here would not be possible.
It's clear that we are hemorrhaging supporters right now due to our very controversial stances on empathy and goodness for our fellow person.
So with that, Adam.
Oh, jeez. So with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that is full of omnipotent power and a sidekick.
Mm.
And a very loud barking dog. That
look
I
at,
hope isn't being picked
me.
Up by the mic.
Look at me. Now I have the quiet dog.
No shit. Jeez, Ben. The dog's on the other bark this time. Make it so. The captain, Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.